Today on the podcast, me and Andrew Lassise sit down and chat about sobriety in entrepreneurship, as well as the different problems that entrepreneurs, both sober and not, experience at the varying levels. This is just like a really great down-to-earth conversation about my struggles with addiction, Andrew's struggles with addiction, and how they've shaped our lives as entrepreneurs and how it's actually empowered us to really build a business and make a decision to switch from excessive overuse of drugs and alcohol to creating a business and a life that not only is our own, but one that we are so proud of showing up for each and every day. So this is a really great episode, guys. I really encourage you to listen to it, especially if you're struggling or have struggled with addiction, your sobriety, or anything like that. I will say this is not a religious or anything close to a religious conversation. We do talk about God, but we make it very clear that it is not a God that is, let's just say, in the mainstream. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode, and I can't wait to hear what you think. Welcome back to the Becoming Virtually Free podcast. Today's guest is Andrew Lassise. Welcome.
Amy, thank you so much for having me.
I'm excited to chat with you today. Before we dive in, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're getting up to in 2019?
Wow, 2019 already. Even though it's like October almost.
Yeah.
All right. So my background, I guess my bio would be Andrew Lassise, serial entrepreneur / IT professional / person in long-term sobriety. My background, when I was 16, I was in a pop punk band called Strike Three. And we got like some recognition. Like if you Google, we won a contest with Ultimate Guitar in like early 2000s, and we got like some recognition. Nothing turned into anything like huge. Otherwise, I guess IT wouldn't have happened. I'd be the next rock star. But I started learning a lot about marketing and how to get our name out there and how to impress people that were essentially trying to do business with us, which is, you know, what your fans are when you're in a band. And we were doing everything do it yourself, and we had recorded an album, and we went to get it printed and pressed, but it was really expensive, and we were like 15 years old. So it's not like, oh, well, let me just work a couple extra hours, you know, like all of us are broke and we're kids. So I put some things together and learned how to press CDs and duplicate them and make like nice cases and actually make something that looked, we'll say, like 90% legitimate. There was still traces of a 15-year-old did this in his parents' basement, but it looked better than you would think. And then I realized that I could do this for other people as well and make money doing it. And that was my first step into entrepreneurship. Fast forward a couple years and I went to college. I did well, but I guess you could say I drank more than the average bear. I started drinking a lot, and blacking out every night became commonplace. And from about age 19 to 26, that was my truth. It was raging alcoholic every night, drinking anywhere from 12 to 24 beers, shots, what have you. Like, my life was pretty unmanageable. And then early 2013, I got a DUI. Blew a .24, which is very illegal. And I met with a lawyer This guy, Gil Cochran, who kind of saved my life in a crazy way. But I remember I walked into this guy's office, and if you could imagine, it's kind of like a Hogwarts kind of just weird, magical kind of place. And it was very strange for a law office. And he sits me down, he's looking me dead in the eye, and he was like, "Andrew, I've got one question for you." And I'm just like, uh-oh. Like, is he going to ask, like, did I do it? Am I don't know what to expect. He looks me dead in the eye. He's like, "Andrew, do you like magic? Because I take DUIs," and he does like one of those like hand things. He's like, "and make them disappear." And I was like, oh my God, this is the best and worst human being I've ever met in my life. And so he tells me, "Look, Andrew, this is how we're going to beat it. You're going to go to alcohol class. You're going to put a breathalyzer in your car to prove that you don't always drink and drive. And you could do 12-step recovery if you actually want to get sober." And I was like, "Well, I don't actually want to get sober. That sounds terrible." So I put a breathalyzer in my car. I failed it 3 more times before I went to court. And the judge is like, "Wait, you put a breathalyzer in before I told you to put a breathalyzer in, and you failed it." So it was a toss-up between rehab and going to jail. I chose the former, and I've been sober ever since 2013. Started my company in 2014, grew it from 36,000 year one to 1.7 million in year two.
No big deal, of course.
Yeah, 48X is, it's not the average story, but I was very blessed with a lot of great people, a lot of great opportunities, and things just fell into place because we kept things on the up and up. There was fast money to be made, and I turned it down a lot of times, and it ended up paying dividends in the long run, which has kind of been my goal all along.
Which is amazing. And I truly believe, I mean, I know a lot of entrepreneurs out there would disagree, but I believe that should be all of our goals, is long-term sustainable wealth and not just like fast cash.
Yeah, but that's not like the, I wanted to say the American way. I guess it's probably not the Canadian way.
Yeah, it's the same thing. We're the same. Yeah.
It's not the human being way. We want what we don't have, and we want it now, and we don't want to earn it.
So people, I don't understand how, though, but I completely agree with you.
Right. Well, everybody's a couch potato watching reruns of Friends, complaining about the skinny person who's out there exercising every day. And it's like, well, if you want what they have, you have to do what they do. Mm-hmm. And if you want to sit around and do nothing, your body will reflect that. Your bank account will reflect that. And I think it's funny, I'll have employees who don't perform necessarily like top of the class. They'll say, "Well, I've been here for 2 years. I deserve a raise." And in my mind, I'm just, and don't get me wrong, I will give credit where credit's due. And I do appreciate when people don't just hop from job to job to job. But when your reasoning is, "I have been paid the same amount of money to do the exact same job, and now I would like more money, but not take on more responsibility," to me, that's like the 8th place trophy. That's like, you did nothing to deserve it, but here is your congratulations for doing literally what we agreed on 2 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. I completely agree. I don't have the same experience like as an employer and an employee, but when I was in university, I was a teaching assistant. I don't know what it's called in the States, but basically I graded papers for university levels. And I remember they would come and they would be like, "Well, I deserve this and this and this." And I'm like, "Why do you deserve it?" And they're like, "Well, I'm attending class and I've paid tuition." And I'm like, "Oh, dear Lord." Like, you know,
you did exactly what you're supposed to do. That doesn't get bonuses.
Yeah, I'm like, just so gets,
the agreement was I will pay you to do this, and the fact that you are doing it is why you haven't been fired.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not going to go out. I'll give you a pat on the back and recognition. Give credit where credit's due, but
absolutely.
We want these feel good, everybody wins, and nobody wins when everybody wins. The other day, my wife and I, we ran in a 5K, and I didn't do as well as I had wanted to. Mm-hmm. And they were giving out participation trophies, but they had run out, or not trophies, what did you call them? Like
ribbons or.
Yeah, yeah. With the little the medals at the end.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they were giving out participation medals, but I didn't finish early enough to get a participation medal. And in my head, when that happened, I was thinking, you know what? I deserve to not get one because I didn't perform well. And then this girl goes into her truck and pulls out like a box of more participation medals, and I get one. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to train harder for the next one. I'm fine with getting this medal. And like, I experienced that in my own brain that I was going to do the extra work to get the reward. But when I get the reward without doing the work, what's the point in doing the work? But that's the society we live in. You don't have to work hard, and everybody's entitled to participation medals.
I know. It drives me crazy. I have always had an aversion to those participation medals, but before I even got into this like line of work where like you, like that example is very like the key of why our society is like a little crazy. But I would always take them off. I'm like, I just ran a race that I paid to run with like a time that's okay. Like, what's the point of getting a medal? I was like, you're just making me feel better because I've paid to be here. Like, that's the only thing. It drives me nuts.
The other thing that drives me nuts is I actually trained hard for one a couple weeks ago, and I don't know where I placed, but it was definitely top 10. And they gave out participation medals, but they didn't announce the results. And it was like the other defeat. It was like, why did I bother trying if I'm not even going to get recognition? But at least I get the internal, like, I know I did well for myself. And like, no one's looking up the race results for the badass running companies, whatever the thing was called. Yeah. No one's like, oh, look at that. Andrew came in seventh. Not bad. No one cares. Yeah.
I mean, feel maybe special. You never know. People look at weird things on the internet, right?
Yeah. Well, if they're Googling me, it was the Harvest Moon 5K. If the results are out, someone find me. Go on rushtechsupport.com/Amy. I'm going to have a landing page specifically for this. If you can find my 5K results.
Oh my God, that's so funny. They're probably out there. Someone's going to take it upon them to find them too. So it's going to be funny. So I'd love to know, like, if you don't mind talking about it briefly, like you talked about your addiction, your alcoholism. Do you know what like caused it? Was it like an amount of stress? Was it like just, I mean, I believe everything comes down to stress, but like, have you pinpointed that? Are you kind of just like, it happened and I'm moving forward?
My best way to kind of put it is just, I was born with a disease where whatever I have, it is not enough. And I am born with a disease that more always equals better. And so just the way that I'm wired, like when I was a kid, I enjoyed playing Final Fantasy VII, and it was like, you know what would be great is instead of playing it for 1 or 2 hours, if I played it for 12 hours straight and did an entire day of it, 24 hours straight, whatever, like more is always better in my brain. So when I discovered alcohol at age 16, felt great, and I had the confidence that I was looking for, and I was on top of the world. And I think the first time I drank, I maybe had, I want to say like 10-ish, in the 8 to 12 range. Mm-hmm. And I remember feeling great. And it was like, I should do this all the time because this is great. And then I went off to college. I didn't have my parents around. And it was like, well, I'll just keep doing this more and more and more and more because I found something I liked and more is always better. And unfortunately, there started to be consequences associated with it, but I wasn't acting off of my rational brain, the entrepreneur brain, the, like, if I put one and one together, I'm going to get two. I'm sitting there with this irrational monkey brain that's like, if I take 7 and 8 and mash them together and flip it inside out, then I've got negative 17. And like nothing makes any sense at all. But that's how my brain was operating. And until, you know, in January, I believe the date was January 25th, 2013, when I got the DUI. At the time, it was the worst thing that had ever happened to me in my life. But in retrospect, looking back, it was one of the best things that ever happened to me because it was the wake-up call that I needed. But I think there was a bit of masking stress and there was a bit of entitlement. I graduated with a financial planning degree in 2009 and the recession was in full force. No one was going to hire me. And I had this chip on my shoulder. I was like, don't you know who I am? I am a college graduate with a financial planning degree. It's not my fault the economy tanked, but I would be great at this job that I've never done before. And so drinking just made sense. And I was working in restaurants and drinking is very accepted in the restaurant bar scene.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there was a bit of I drink to fit in. And then there was I drink because I enjoy the feeling that gets produced by alcohol. And until I went to rehab and was introduced to 12-step recovery and realized that I don't have to keep living this way. And my baseline, I would wake up at like a 2 out of 10. And then when I was drinking, my life would be like a 4 or 5 out of 10. And then when I'd wake up, it'd be back at a 2. And my life was just an endless cycle of shittiness. And until I could realize that I could live my life differently and I could wake up now. My baselines are at like an 8, get some coffee in me. And like, I'm starting my day at a 9.
Yeah.
And until I had experienced it, I would have just told you like not drinking sounds terrible. That's the worst thing ever. That's the only time my life gets to a 5 out of 10. But if I eliminate that whole mindset and that whole habit pattern and replace it with things that are better in my life. Like I've found a higher power that I choose to call God. I'm not really into the whole Jesus thing, but you know, whatever floats your boat. But I've tapped into something that works for me and black and white analytical, like Andrew pre-26, pre-sobriety, like that scoreboard is very, very weak compared to Andrew post-26. When he got sober. And just thinking about it now, actually, my band was actually a lot more successful before I was drinking than it was after I was drinking. So there's probably been more correlations than I've even recognized of before I was drinking, the band was featured on Ultimate Guitar and we got all this recognition and stuff. And then after I started drinking, things kind of fizzled out. So there's a lot of downfall with it, but that's just my experience. You know, I'm not this person that's out to like get the whole world sober, but I am a testament to if you feel like your life is unmanageable and drinking, maybe you have a little problem with it and you're maybe open to that. Like I love working with entrepreneurs who are trying to get sober because we kind of have this like, oh, people don't understand what I'm going through because you don't know what it's like to have to do marketing, sales, fulfillment, HR, like you don't understand what I'm going through. But the fact of the matter is like, I know exactly what you're going through. And that's why I'm a big fan of 12-step recovery, is because the whole idea behind it is, I have been in the hole that you are in. Here is how I got out of it. As opposed to, you know, the doctors in my family saying, stop drinking, it's really bad for you.
Yeah.
I need someone that can empathize with me. And it's not to say that, excuse me, not to say 12-step recovery is the only way you can get mm-hmm. sober. I know for a lot of people, that's not their truth. Like, I have a podcast with people on it who are sober entrepreneurs. And those people, they're not all 12-step recovery. They're not people in NA, AA. They're people with their own thing that works for them. And all I can do is share my own experience. But it's kind of one of those, like, if you would like what I have, here is what I did, and you can do what I do. It doesn't make it right or wrong, but it's what's worked for me.
And I really appreciate that, because I'm one of the entrepreneurs that don't, not that I don't believe in the 12 steps. I just, it's not what I did to get sober. And I also had like a bad experience with a therapist who was like a diehard 12 stepper, and gave me like ultimatums with the program. So she was saying back, I was like in the process, or I thought I might relapse. It was like my 5-year anniversary, very hard time for all addicts out there. And I thought I might relapse. So I was like going to therapy, and she was like trying to help me, and I wouldn't go because I had never been, I didn't want to go. I had known people that were addicts. I thought I could find a different space to help me through this time. And I was basically given the ultimatum, like, you go to this meeting and prove that you went somehow, or we're not going to work together anymore. And I went to the meeting, and it was great. And it was like, the people there were wonderful, but it didn't feel for me. Like, I'm very like I'm an energetic person where I can like feel the energy. I get stressed, and I'm very like impacted by other people's as well. I'm also like super high anxiety, so all those fun things. And I couldn't. And I left. I never went back to my therapist. I never went back to an NA meeting. And ever since that day, I've been like, no, like, no way. But like, I am like you, like, I would never ever say to someone, don't do it, because it's not my place. Everyone's circumstance is different. And maybe the 12 step, maybe you are like, because it is, I mean, I know it's changed a bit, Andrew, but it was super founded in kind of like Christianity, wasn't it, for the longest time?
No, actually the opposite. It was founded in not Christianity, because the founder, Bill Wilson, was either atheist, or I believe he was agnostic.
So, okay.
Yeah, and it's based off the foundation of the Oxford Group, which is very religious. And he's like, well, the whole Jesus thing's not for me. And then the guy who was his sponsor, Abby Thatcher, he's the one that said, well, why don't you just make up your own God? And then he was like, okay, I can get behind that. And that was actually the foundation of it, was not the Jesus God, which is kind of what attracted me to it, because I could relate with that.
Of course.
Yeah. And, you know, your experience is, that's what your experience was. Mm-hmm. And I could be here and say, oh, you went to the wrong one. There's low energy ones.
I've heard that so many times.
High energy ones. But you know what? Your experience is your experience. And how many years sober do you have now?
Seven.
Okay. 7 years sober. Do you know how many people go into 12-step rooms and do not get 7 years sober?
A lot. Yeah.
A lot. Especially with the way that it's run now, and it's very diluted, and it's different than how it was run originally. But regardless, your results speak for themselves. So who's to say that 12-step recovery, Amy, you should have done that, because yeah. You're sitting here, you're happy, you've got a successful business, you've got this great podcast, you've got all these great things. But there's diehard 12 steppers, and they'll be like, you're not happy. You could be so much happier. And it's like, screw you. Like, like you can live in your world where you're telling me that I'm not happy and not sober, but the reality, your results speak for themselves. So
exactly.
What worked for me, and what works for you. And that's the beauty of having an open mind to entrepreneurship, having an open mind to recovery. Because like how I built and scaled Rush Tech Support isn't the same way that like the, I forget their last name, like Koch brothers that built McDonald's.
Oh, I wouldn't know, but I'm following.
Like how McDonald's was built out and franchised looks nothing like what I've done with my company. So it really, there's not exactly a one size fits all. I do think it's important to at least have some strategy and stick to it. So for instance, you know, when you're building a company, like I've gotten a lot into books and reading, and there are books that just have like completely opposite points of view on things. There's some foundations and truths in all of them, but there's some that are like, you should grow as fast as possible, fire as many people as quickly as possible, fast to hire, fast to fire.
Really?
Then there's slow to hire, slow to fire, because you should get people that don't have experience. You should build them up exactly in the image of you. Or there's, you should get people that are the best of the best already, so you don't have to train them because they already know more than you. And it's like, well, which one's right? You literally just described hiring everyone. They either know less than me and I have to teach them, or they know more than me and I am at their mercy. Like, which is it?
Yeah, exactly. But it's the polar opposites.
Exactly. But they're presented as a matter of fact. And I think people just, they take everything at face value. And, you know, you see a commercial, hydroxy cut, like, eat this and you'll just lose all these pounds. And like, I haven't tried it, but I have a feeling that
it's probably not gonna work.
It's probably not gonna work. Like, I don't know. I haven't tried it. So there's contempt prior to investigation. But at the same time, like, I'm not seeing the millions of people that have tried it all magically losing weight. Like, there's some sort of disconnect. But there's other people that'll say, oh, I saw it on the news, it must be true. And there have been articles printed about me that make me sound way better than I actually am. And it's, I get, you know, you're trying to build up this great story and stuff, but like, I'm just some dude that had some lucky breaks and found ways to sustain them and capitalize on them. But like, I'm nothing crazy special. Like, I got decent grades. I'm willing to take calculated risks. But like, at the end of the day, like, we're just people, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I was actually having like a very similar conversation to this yesterday with one of my teammates, actually, because I like to pontificate. Like, I basically pay my people to just listen to me talk sometimes. I love them to death. We have great relationships. But we were talking about this, and we were talking about how, like you said, you were willing to take calculated risks. And a lot of people aren't willing to take calculated risks. They don't want to make that decision for themselves, because what if they're wrong? What if they make the wrong decision? Because I think we all know deep down, but like, at the base of everything, behind all the junk, that we can consume all the media that will help us. I'm not saying that things like ClickFunnels, like their funnel strategy and like all this stuff is like not good, it doesn't work, but it might not work for you. And we're just so terrified of trying that ourselves, because like, what if we're wrong? And then we're already lacking some confidence, or we have imposter syndrome, or something's going on, probably, unless you have one of those like neurotypical diseases that makes you have no fear, which I wish I were you. But like, it's really fascinating to me when people are like, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? And their answer like is almost in the question.
So it's very interesting. I also like how you're like really downplaying. You're like, I'm just some guy that took some calculated risks. It's funny. I say the same thing. I'm like, oh, I was just lucky. I met the right people at the right time. But I really actually don't believe in that. I believe that we all meet that the right people at the time we're supposed to, you know?
Yeah. And I was at a conference about a year ago with a John Maxwell team, and there was kind of that same exact scenario. And I kind of pushed it away, like, no, I'm nothing special. And she was like, what she had said, and it kind of resonated with me. And she just said, like, Andrew, like, God put those opportunities in your life, and you are the one who put the systems in place and the company in place, the customers, all the marketing, everything that went behind it. Whether or not you did the fulfillment, you still put the pieces in place. And by you saying, it's not me, it's other people, that's almost, and I mean, she was a little more religious than I was, but I get where she's coming from. But she was just like, that's you basically saying, God didn't do any of this. Like, other people did it. And you're discrediting the opportunity that God gave you. And I was like, I can see that side of it. I just try to not turn that into ego, which I have a difficult time with. So if I'm on the side of humility, even if it's overly humble, and it's like, well, you know, you've had multi-million dollar years for the last 4 years, you know, you're doing something right. And that may be the case, but in my mind, I've just kind of become used to it now. So my problems, I still have problems. There's just more zeros on them, but I still feel the exact same way of if, you know, in the past, like a friend of mine stole $100 and that was like devastating. And a couple years ago, some guys, long story short, I have $50,000 less than I should have. But I mean, then there's like in a vacuum, like if everything else played out the same way. But
yeah,
the feeling was the exact same, even though it was 500 times the impact in the dollar amount. It's still that feeling, the betrayal, the I don't have something that I earned that flowed through me, you know, you still feel the same feelings. There's just different numbers associated with them and different people involved, different layers of complexity. But ultimately, like a business, it's just get somebody interested. You can sell for them, you know, your service solves one of their problems, and then you collect money on it and you keep them happy. And then you just systematize. Here are the steps I took to get them interested. Here are the steps I took to sell for them. Here are the steps I took for fulfillment. And then just hire other people to replicate those results over and over. And that's really all there is to it on the very, very molecular level. But then human beings, we get these attitudes and this entitlement. I know better than you. Don't get me wrong, my team, most of them are way better at their job than I would be, but sometimes it's like, yeah, but who writes your check?
I think that's pretty funny. I was gonna say something, I've lost my train of thought about it, but yeah, it's definitely interesting. And that's the one thing that I get a lot of questions about. I mean, I'm not in the multi-million making money just yet, we'll get there, but I have people be like, because in comparison to where they are in their virtual assistant like journey, like I'm miles, 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 miles ahead. And they're just like, oh my God, like, what are you struggling with? I'm like, everything you're struggling with, imposter syndrome, time management, knowing what strategy to take. Like, I don't know. No, I mean, I do know. Obviously, I'm more educated than them. I'm also marketing operations, so I have to know somewhat of marketing. But I think that's also this like idea that once you make it, you're there forever without thinking that
strategies change and marketing, your market changes, it gets smarter. And like with all the technology, it's only going to get like way, 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 way more smarter than it is now. So it's not like you achieve something and then you're good. Like you have to achieve it and then sustain it.
Right.
And that's the trick.
Marketing is just getting so good now that I remember the first time that I saw a targeted ad and my mind was blown.
Yeah.
I remember I was on Facebook and there's this band Chiodos, and there was a an ad on the side of Facebook back, this is way back like 2006 maybe 2007. And I was like, oh my God, that's great. There's a Chiodos concert. And I was talking about them to somebody else. And I was like, oh, you know, they're on Facebook. Like their ads are on Facebook. And other people are like showing me their Facebook and it's not there. And then I get on mine and it is there. And I was like, I don't understand. Like, how do we not see the same ads? And that was the first time when it kind of clicked. Oh, this thing knows what I like and then targets based on what I like. And it's only gotten crazier and crazier. Anytime you go to any website, you start seeing the ads just everywhere. And there's some companies that are just really, really good at retargeting and hitting the same thing over and over. One of my competitors, like I was on their website and they must retarget for like an entire year. It may even be longer. Like I get their ads all the time.
That's a long retargeting time.
Yeah. Well, I'm clearly not going to do business with them, but the fact that I see their name over and over and over and over and over based off of one website visit like a year ago.
Yeah, it's pretty insane.
It's kind of wasted money, but at the same time, do you need me to name one competitor whose name I see all the time? Like if I was just Joe Schmo and didn't own an IT company and I needed IT support,
yeah,
every time I'm on Facebook, I'm retargeted by them. So there's definitely improved strategies. And when the targeting is done specifically to people that specifically fit your specific criteria, like eventually people catch on, because it used to be, what a coincidence, there's a concert yeah. near me that I'm interested in. That's a great coincidence that I saw it, because we grew up with, you are watching a TV show and you see a commercial, and most of the commercials you hate, but like every now and then there's a commercial that you, okay, I like this. But now it's like everything you see is something that you like and interests you.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. And even though I, like, that's what I do, like, I do that stuff, it still gets me. Almost every time, I'm like, well, not every time, but a lot of the times when I'm actually looking to purchase something and I see they're retargeting, and now I'm like, oh man, but look how speedy they've been on that. Like, that's some good marketing strategy. And I'm like, well, if they're this good at it, like I might as well buy into the program or whatever.
If you're that good at marketing, then maybe I should buy your product.
Yeah, I'm the worst.
Or it's the other way. It's like, man, if you were bad at marketing, I would have bought it the first time and you wouldn't have had to retarget to abandon cart. So is it you're so bad at selling you have to be good at marketing? Or I mean, the reality is if you're good at marketing, you will make everything better. It's so difficult and it's so saturated. Everybody is an SEO expert and like has nothing to show for it. It's insane.
I know, that's the one thing I've really started to notice lately, all these people that are like, oh, I'm at this and I'm at this and I'm at this, and I'm like, whoever is teaching this group of people that they need to pollute my social media networks, like, we need to have a moment in time. Because do you guys actually know anything? Like, that's the other thing, is like, it's great if you're SEO expert, what do you have to show for it? Like, can you show me like the
give
back
me your
end
client list?
Yeah, like
give
I want to see
client list, and I'm going to Google their top keyword that they need to rank for, and that's the easiest way. Or if you type in like best SEO company in West Palm Beach, Florida, and whoever ranks number one, that should be enough, because
yeah.
Rank number one in the most difficult space to rank number one in. So clearly they know what they're doing, because they wouldn't be number one if they didn't know what they were doing. And that's really where the decision should be based. But I mean, we had a marketing SEO division and the guy knew his stuff and we would get people to the top. But then there's, you know, how many people are searching for this particular keyword? And even if you rank number one, but you didn't do enough research, or there's just not enough searches for it. You know, one of them was a painter and we had him ranking number one in like everything, every market that he touched, he was number one, but he wasn't getting a whole lot of traffic because just there aren't a lot of people Googling that. Like they're on HomeAdvisor, they're on Facebook in a group asking for recommendations. Like that's where even though we were successful with on the SEO side, it's still, you know, the client's looking for lead generation at the end of the day. They want more money in their pocket. They want ROI. They don't care if they're number one. They want what number one represents, which is money in their pocket.
Exactly. And yeah, SEO is like, I'm actually on a pretty intensive SEO strategy for my own business that I'm not sharing too much about until I finish it to see if it actually works. So, cause I'm like super, I have that imposter syndrome issue. So I'm like, oh, but I know that like, if this doesn't work, then it's not the end of the world, because I, exactly what you said, like, I don't want to be, I mean, I would love to be number one, but I don't, that's not why I want to be number one. It's because I want the stuff associated with it. Like I want to be the income and the, like, I hate using impact because I just know everybody uses impact. It's not impact that I'm looking for, but like the income and the ability to connect with more people and like help more people and actually get seen, because as you said, this market is so convoluted, just like digital space, not my market, just in general, the digital marketing area. So yeah, it's just, you know, new level, new problem, as you said, or same problems with more zeros, or, you know, same, but different. But Andrew, it's been awesome chatting with you. I could chat all day. I do have another interview, so I've got to let you go. But before I do, let the audience know where they can find you on the interwebs.
Yeah, I know I said it jokingly, but we're going to have a landing page for this podcast. It's going to be rushtechsupport.com/Amy. And anyone who's listening, we can do a free computer repair remotely. So you can be anywhere in the world. Wow. Give us a call, say that you found out about us from the podcast, and maybe we'll do some retargeting. Who knows? But Amy, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's been great. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for offering that awesome free resource for the listeners to get that free repair. So thanks so much again. The one thing I'm going to ask you before you sign off is what I ask all my guests, or at least a iteration of it. And that's, if you had to tell a new entrepreneur one thing, and it, that one thing like really hit home and it like shaped the way that they built their business, what would it be?
If they had to do one thing and one thing only, it would be read the book Traction by Gino Wickman. Follow that to a T. And I know I was saying earlier, like, there's a million different books with a million different perspectives, but that one is very, 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 very effective, and it doesn't get the recognition it deserves. That, or the E-Myth Revisited, is like the more popular version of Traction.